got that dope. Ethan, if this is really going to work, you've got to call me Josh on the podcast.
You're kidding, right?
No, I'm serious. Like, that's going to help people know that we're two regular guys and we're coming at this sort of on some sort of equal
playing. I'm going to have to call you Josh?
Yes. We're really normally teacher student, I know, but for this, we're just going to be two people who are doing a podcast because we love debate.
I honestly forgot that your name was Josh. Your name has always been Mr. Herring to me. This is a shock.
I know. It would normally happen after graduation. We're a couple years early, but it'll be okay. I promise nobody will make fun of you because of it. It'll be all right. We'll survive.
All right, let's do it.
All right. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the very first episode of What's the Res? An ongoing conversation about the current resolutions in the world of high school debate. My name is Josh Herring. I'm a teacher and debate coach at Thales Academy in Rollsville, North Carolina. And I'm joined today by one of my students, Ethan Delves.
Hello.
And today we're going to introduce ourselves and talk about the podcast and hopefully figure out what this thing is that we're trying to get started. Before I go any further, I can't forget our excellent audio technician, Noah Berman, who is making all the magic work. So thank you, Noah, for everything you're doing. Ethan, let's start with introductions. What should our audience know about you?
Hello, everyone. My name is Ethan. I've done debate for 4 years now with Thales Academy, and I have just lived debate for 4 years, and I absolutely just love it.
Excellent. Ethan, let's take a short trip down memory lane
because you've
been with me doing debate for almost since the beginning. Where did we start going to big tournaments like Durham Academy or Dogwood League?
Oh, no.
Where did this thing start?
This all started at the Enloe tournament in that one September, November. Do you remember which one?
Oh my goodness, that Enloe would be that'd be September
because yeah.
Usually that was one of their Eagle Open. Tournaments.
Yeah. This was the Enloe tournament. That's where it all started. I remember my first debate tournament. I hopped into the debate round and my hands were shaking. I was freaking out. I could hardly deliver the speech. And somehow I came around with one round that day.
Yeah, if I remember right, you were doing LD.
Yep.
And you were seventh grade, I think.
I was in seventh grade. Yep.
So you were about 12 years old going up against a 16, 17-year-old high school junior.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was scary.
How'd you win the round?
He lost on a technicality. He brought up new information in the final round. Big no-no.
Yeah, you can never underestimate the ability of the opposition to do something wrong.
For sure.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, let's see. So, Ethan, how did you even get into debate? Were you always debate-oriented, or did you start doing something different?
Well, in fact, I was not. I actually started by giving a speech for student council. I was wanting to be sixth grade class representative, and I gave the speech. It was an amazing speech, if I do say so myself, very emotional, full of pathos.
Lots
and that went well, and I remember that I eventually got to talking to you after that speech, and you introduced me to what debate was, and I joined the club. I had my first debate and mistook it for a speech, and I remember that being a very, very funny day. But yeah, I delivered a speech for student council, ended up getting elected, and then went to debate from there, and I've loved it ever since.
Excellent. That was a few years back. That was we started doing debate at Thales as an after-school club, meeting on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I remember I really messed up the advertising, the very first version of that club I tried.
Cause you called it forensics, didn't
you? I did. I was
interesting, was it?
No, it's just so sad. I did competitive speech or forensics for 4 years in college and a semester of debate. So when I tried to get interest going here, I just went with what I knew and called it forensics. And
I'm guessing that didn't appeal to any middle schoolers.
You'd think, but there was one.
Jaden.
Yes, Jaden.
Maybe
if he ever hears this, he can email us and we'll get him on the podcast with Skype or something. But yeah, Jaden showed up. He was a brave fellow. He thought he was coming to something like CSI forensics. He was ready to chop up bodies and solve the crimes. And when he learned it was about speeches and research and standing up straight and pronouncing things correctly, he stuck around, which was really fantastic.
Yeah.
But I renamed the club later that year, and once I called a speech and debate, suddenly there were a whole bunch of middle school girls that joined, and they wanted to talk. And I think the next year you jumped on board. And
yep.
We got into the world of public forum and a little bit of LD, and now we've even started our own, very small, but our own debate league here at Thales Academy between the different schools started by Mr. Luddy.
We've come a long way.
Too true. Okay, well, so let's get to a little bit about the details of our podcast before we go any further. I'm thinking particularly we ought to take a moment just talk about the purpose of this podcast.
Right,
why are we doing this? So Ethan, what was it that made you think, oh yeah, let's do a podcast and here's what we'll say and just maybe someone will want to listen to us?
I've been thinking that every time I go into a tournament, the number one things I look for is not just all the facts on each side of a debate, but I really want to understand the debate. If someone says something to me, I don't want to have only evidence to pull against them or evidence to pull up in my favor. I want to understand what I'm saying and why I'm saying it, because that translates into something that's a greater purpose in life. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not solely for the purpose of winning a competition or beating an opponent, but you can take it somewhere else. And it oftentimes, in fact, all the time, means something in the real world because we debate real world topics at tournaments. So
debate actually sort of like changes you, shapes you. And
it really does. It really shapes your way of thinking for being able to see both sides of an argument and then pick which one that you believe is more plausible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think one of the, I remember you asked me if there was a way to kind of get more people excited about debate. And I thought a podcast might be one answer to that question.
Yeah, it's fun. I promise.
Yeah. That was honestly one of the reasons I was in for this, because I'd love to bring more people into this and really spread a love of debate. And on a practical side, as a teacher, I'm always interested in how can we create lasting resources.
For sure.
Because one of the things, I've been coaching debate now for, this is year five, and even in those 5 years, I've seen a couple, like the gun laws.
Yeah.
And a couple different versions, but some resolution about gun control has come back around. Immigration is another hot topic right now. It was big 2 or 3 years ago. There seem to be these topics that keep cycling around, and it seemed to me that it might be helpful to have just a 15 to 20 minute podcast that would really summarize kind of what we thought about that resolution at one point in time, and maybe a few years later we come back to it and like, oh, here's what we said in 2019. How's this resolution different in 2023?
Yeah, I feel like it's really helpful going into a tournament to have at least a framework of how to approach the round and approach each round as you go in, because as a young debater, back when I was in 7th and 8th grade, I would go into a debate, and when I had a partner, completely reliant on that partner and all of these facts that we had, just throwing them at someone else and expecting to win the round. But if I feel like that having lasting resources, such as we're trying to create here, is really going to help people get a more full understanding of what the world has for us as far as debate goes.
Totally. Totally. Well, let's take a moment then, and I'll start us off on this one, and I'll feed it over to you. But let's take just a second and talk about what we think actually happens in a debate. For those who are debaters, this might constitute a debate paradigm, if you will. So when I think about debate, no matter what the style, which for this podcast purposes, that's Public Forum, Lincoln Douglas, and Coolidge, we'll get to in a few moments. But when I think about debate, I'm thinking primarily about a game that people are playing. And as a game, it really should be fun. It should be something that we enjoy doing together.
Yeah, yeah.
And like any other game, it's got rules, it's got expectations, it's got different roles that we play. You've got affirmative, you've got negative, you've got different burdens on each side. And if we do our jobs right, we come together and we end up sharpening each other through playing this game. But seeing debate that way, it means that I think debate has a few things that are crucial that we always have to pay attention to. The first of those is the structure of the debate and the structure of the case, the structure of the argument. And then as part of that is where once we've got the structure, part of where I see a lot of the value in debate lies in students doing the research for the debate. And I hope that this podcast becomes really a resource for people as they're researching their resolutions. And speaking of the resolution, that's probably another piece I'd say of my own debate paradigm is I think the resolution is paramount.
Right.
So I'm not looking for arguments where people are running K's and just rejecting the resolution. I'm also not looking for really reaching, extraneous, stretching arguments that might possibly tie to a resolution on an odd day. I'm looking for arguments that really have everything to do with the resolution, because the resolution is what we've all come to discuss and debate in that competition. So as part of that, one of the things I know we've talked about in the last few few months is really looking at the difference, how sometimes resolutions are policy-oriented, and other times they're values-oriented.
Yeah.
And depending on that orientation, we have to treat the arguments differently. We argue differently if we're appealing to values, and maybe we're going to look at some philosophical sources. But if we're looking at a policy resolution and we're going to weigh advantages and disadvantages, we're looking at that differently than values. So all of that, I think, lands me in a pretty traditional spot in terms of a debate coach and how I think about debate. So, Ethan, I've been talking for a while, so take it away. If you had to clarify your debate paradigm for people who've never seen you debate but are going to listen to you describe kind of what you see in a resolution, what are you looking for in a good debate?
So for this, I would love to cite this amazing talk that I heard while I was in Vermont at the Coolidge Foundation, and there was this guy talking about he completely tricked us. He was saying how in some debates that he's seen, people are using made-up facts, and they're winning with these facts because these facts are so outlandish, but put on one side of a debate. And he, at the end of the speech, asked everyone, is it okay to do that, after completely convincing everyone in the room that that was okay. And pretty much no one raised their hand in opposition to making up fake facts. And then soon after, he condemned all of us and told us how wrong that is. And that has really played a huge part in my debate paradigm, or what I really value in debate. And that's truth in communication. I feel like using true facts on each side, because any side of any debate, you'll find that there are solid facts on each side of the debate. And what you really need is for people to bring those solid facts together. Because when you bring them together and have a true debate, that debate can not only deepen your understanding of the round and of whatever policy or value that you're debating about that day, but it's honestly just a truthful exercise, and that's the way the game should be played. It's not something where you trick people or use deceptive measures to get your way and eventually, you know, trick your way up to that trophy. It's a truth exercise where people need to bring true things together. And that's probably the number one thing I value next to understanding the topic and really using your debate experience to move forward in the real world and to analyze arguments that you hear in the real world along with the other debaters that you debate with. And it really, all of the debaters in this generation, I feel like will grow up understanding how to analyze arguments that people throw at them, and we'll be able to make better decisions about, or, you know, the way we vote or anything like that. And we'll be informed that way, and we'll be able to take care of ourselves in that manner and make decisions for ourselves, because we can see every side of everything.
So debate then really has a lot to do with being kind of a good citizen and really a good member of our communities then.
Yeah, it really does. It really builds those skills, I would say. That's what I want out of it for me, and I feel like it's really advanced me in that kind of way.
Now, as you were saying that, it reminded me of a headline I saw about a debate in the national news, where there actually was a high school debate. It was out in Utah, where there were students who were accused of being racist because they ran the arguments they had prepared about immigration. Is that the sort of thing that you think makes for a good debate, or are you looking at something different than that sort of moment?
So no, because when you're doing something like that, it's completely ad hominem. You're attacking your opponent. And the purpose of a debate, if you really can win against an argument, you can win against the argument. You don't have to attack the person's rhetoric, the person's style, who that person is. Because in order for an argument, whether it's in a competition or in the real world, to be taken down and taken down for good, you need to be able to say why it's wrong. And you can't simply prove a person invalid. You have to be able to prove what they say is invalid, because not only does that help you understand and get closer to what's right and what's true, but there are people watching. I remember I saw that headline too. There's a lot of people watching that debate, and simply saying that a person is this or a person is that doesn't help forward their understanding of the topic and doesn't help forward their understanding of maybe the way that they should vote on a certain policy or should do this way instead. It really ruins the experience of debate to be attacking the person. And honestly, I have seen people do that in tournaments, and I will not do that myself in a tournament, because I believe in truth and I believe in getting closer to a better understanding of something and just really coming closer to that and not cheating my way up to the top, even though it seemed to work out for those people in their favor. It's not what I value in debate.
Well, I appreciate that that position. And for those listening, that probably lays out mine and Ethan's views on debates reasonably well. Let's shift gears to kind of talk about what kinds of shows we're going to do on this podcast, because, of course, we won't always be doing introductory shows like we're doing today. The first of those shows we probably ought to mention are resolution analysis shows, which if this goes according to plan, those will really be kind of the bread and butter. And of course, that's what the name of our show is all about. What's the res is really getting at what's the resolution? What topics do we have at hand and where does that take us? And we've got really three different formats that we'll be focusing on. And those are directly related to the kind of debate that we do in North Carolina. And two of those are through the National Speech and Debate Association. We'll be looking at the resolutions that come out for High School Public Forum, and then also for Lincoln Douglas, which, of course, next year we'll have to do at least two Lincoln Douglas ones for the opening tournaments in September, because we'll have the novice resolution there on civil disobedience.
That's a good one. I love that one.
You went back through this was your first year of high school LD. You debated that one this year, right?
I did debate that one, and it was even better the second time around, because I remember my first time doing debate was that same time of year. I had the same resolution, and I came back around, and because of the skills that I built in debate, I was better able to understand what was going on. And I remember I even asked you before I went into that first tournament, what's a value? And that was a big component of that style of debate I was doing, and I went in there 100% clueless and still happened to pick up a round on some technicality, but... The real value is in understanding, and going back to that that resolution really just tied it together for me and helped me realize where I've come.
Well, and I'm sure it was definitely helpful to also be a couple years older, because LD is not simple, and when you really get into it and you get into the philosophical components of Lincoln Douglas, it does take kind of a more mature mind to wrestle through what are the demands of justice and what are the demands of authority, and when are they right and when are those demands wrong. All of that we'll get to with different LD resolutions, I'm sure. But of course, the other kind of resolution show we'll do, and that's actually going to be our next episode, is going to be resolutions that are released by the Calvin Coolidge Presidential Foundation for the Luddy Debate League. And Ethan, I know you have lots of experiences with the Coolidge Foundation. Could you help our listeners know a bit about what exactly is the Coolidge Foundation? What's the Luddy League? What's going on there?
So the Coolidge Foundation and Luddy League, first of all, for any schools that want to join, we want you. If you are in the North Carolina area, please do reach out to What's the Res, because we would love to have you at these tournaments. But these Luddy League tournaments are really something special, because they bring resolutions in play, and not only do they bring the resolutions, but they prepare a packet to help you with, like I said earlier, understanding what the debate is about. It's called the Coolidge Packet is our nickname for it, and the current resolution that we'll be discussing in the next episode is the United States federal government should make reducing the national debt a fiscal priority. And the Coolidge Foundation does a really good job of breaking down what the resolution really means on both sides. They provide a lot of background so that you can read up on the resolution and really understand where you're going with it, where your arguments will go. So the Coolidge Foundation isn't necessarily holding your hand, walking you through the round, because they want to help you facilitate the skills of speech and debate through your practices. But what they will do is provide a resolution, have everyone debate that resolution, and the goal of that is much more oriented around discovering truth and helping you understand exactly what you're arguing about, rather than just throwing facts or throwing values at people. And even better, most of the judges for those tournaments are lay judges, are parent judges. They're judges that volunteer for all of the student debaters. It's a really great community. And the real value in Coolidge debate is understanding not only how to persuade, you know, those judges that have been judging for 20, 30 years in debate, but parents are everyday people, and those are the people that are that you need to be able to speak with, and eventually one day you will be one of those people when debater comes of voting age and has grown up to that point. So really, I feel like whether it's just the judges or just the students, when everyone comes together at a Coolidge tournament, real understanding is developed, and everybody's eyes are really opened to see all sides of a resolution and really get a deeper understanding of whatever topic
now,
we have.
Just in case our listeners might have that immediate reaction, when you say lay judges, right. Ethan, do you always find that having parents as judges, does it always work out in your favor?
No, it really doesn't. And that really disciplined me as a debater, because I started out at tournaments that were not in the Luddy League. These judges have been judging, or even a lot of the debate judges were coaches just like yourself. And when they were sitting there and I had to convince someone who was similar to the person who had taught me how to debate, I could win in a lot of different ways, and I did well in that way. And when I transferred to Coolidge Debate, a lot of people that have never debated before completely overtook me, because I would be going, say, too fast, too far into things that I didn't need to go into. But Coolidge has really brought me back to the heart of debate and what's important in debate. And I feel like that's again, discovering truth, speaking as if you're talking to a normal human being, you know, not 500, 600 words a minute, but you really are truly talking to another person in debate. And that is the essence of debate. And that is the Coolidge Foundation and Luddy League debate tournaments will develop the essential skills that you need later on in life to be able to
debate. It really is it's a really fun partnership, because and it grew out of our school's founder, Mr. Robert Luddy. He's the head of Captive Air Industries, and he founded Thales Academy and Franklin Academy, St. Thomas More Academy. And he has a lot of connections, one of which is with the Calvin Coolidge Presidential Foundation. They wanted to develop a high school debate league, and Mr. Luddy offered up his schools as wanting to kind of be the place where that happened. And we're now 2 years in to that relationship, and what's really grown out is something pretty unique. And Ethan touched on this, you touched on this really well a moment ago. But each of these days where we just have a single day debate, and they all have the same format, but they rotate amongst different schools in the Raleigh area. But the each day we have a content lecture with an expert on the resolution.
Oh yeah, those experts are great. They literally, the Coolidge Foundation will bring true experts on the topic, and you can ask them questions. You know,
the last
part.
One we had an environmental scientist from Duke University.
We had someone who worked for it was some tax agency or something like that.
Yep.
One time. I mean, these are like true experts in the field mm-hmm. that take time out of their day for the Coolidge Foundation to come down to these debates and interact with students on what the topic means and all the different angles on the topics. And they come well prepared and they know what they're talking about. And you can really understand how to argue truly about a topic when you have someone like that helping you out.
Totally. And there's always a mix of competitors at a Coolidge tournament, because you get folks who have been debating for several years, you get folks who have never debated before. And so we'll also do a how-to debate session, and then you get, there's judges training, and then you have four rounds of debates, the lunch is provided as part of the tournament, and then we have an award ceremony, and it's all done.
It's
been really fun to kind of watch some of the camaraderie develop, too, across our different schools,
sure.
to people that participate in debate.
Yeah.
But the what's unique about the Coolidge resolutions, which is part of what we'll get at in our next episode, is that the Coolidge resolutions are almost always politics and economics in focus,
right.
because the Coolidge Foundation is tied to helping people commemorate and remember President Calvin Coolidge. And now, of course, the part of what the other piece that the Coolidge Foundation is interested in is not just developing their own league, but also bringing together some of the best debaters in the country. So,
right.
Ethan, tell us a little about the Coolidge Cup and how that works.
So, the Coolidge Foundation not only hosts tournaments for the Luddy League in North Carolina, but the Coolidge Foundation is based in Killington, Vermont, where Calvin Coolidge lived. And you get to when you go there, they hold a national tournament called the Coolidge Cup, and it's right on Calvin Coolidge's homestead where he lived when he was young.
Oh, it's just so gorgeous.
It is beautiful. And you can see even the house where he was made president of the United States. He has a really unique story around that. But when you go to Vermont, there's a tournament. Sometimes I think it lasts 2 days is the actual tournament itself, but there's a lot of preliminary rounds to that.
Mm-hmm.
And going to that tournament, I've been twice so far to the Coolidge Cup tournament. It's really interesting to go there because a lot of people make it to the tournament in different ways. They have a online submission platform that you can do to be able to get a chance to go to nationals. Or if you win one of the Luddy school tournaments, there's a qualifier tournament that's usually held in May. You can make it to the Coolidge Cup. And when you go there, you are literally on top of a mountain. You're on top of a mountain and you debate literally outside in tents or within different parts of the Coolidge Foundation or around the Coolidge Homestead. And there are judges there for you. There's food provided. And it is just a really nice place to stay. And there are amazing people there that truly help you understand what debate is. They're there to guide you. And the competition is fierce, but you can, that is where I've learned the most about debate in all of my debate experience, for sure.
Just to touch on that, since I hope we haven't been unfair to folks who have different debate paradigms than we do, but it was really kind of fun to see 75 of the nation's best debaters gathered together for 3 days.
Oh, for sure.
And I got to know some of the kids on that trip, and by the end of the tournament, the top two students, by the time I got to the final round, because it's solo debate by the time you get there.
Right.
But the top two, one student, he's the one who knocked you out of octafinals.
I remember that.
Correctly. But he was fine with spreading one of his techniques. That didn't bother him at all. But his opponent, at one point I remember saying that he specifically, intentionally did not spread. Which tells me by the end of the tournament, you have people who are fine with you going as fast as possible, but that didn't mean it was impossible for someone speaking at a normal pace.
And just for all of those people who are considering joining debate out there who have not yet joined debate, spreading is when a debater goes extremely fast in their speech and literally speaks upwards of 500, 600 words a minute to get as many arguments out as possible. But you're right, Josh, it was really interesting to see how debaters made it all the way to the final round, and you don't necessarily need to speak at 500, 600 words a minute. You can be convincing and you can talk again to normal people out there, and you don't necessarily need to use all of these tactics that that can get you to other places as well, and you can still be an amazing debater. And he was definitely, in my opinion, the best debater at that tournament. Very, very persuasive and really knew what he was talking about.
He was, and I'm sure he's enjoying that $10,000 prize from the Money Cup. So we've been talking about the Coolidge Foundation quite a lot, but what we'll actually be doing in these kinds of resolution analysis episodes is really kind of Ethan and I are going to split two different angles of analysis.
Right.
Whether we're dealing with public forum or LD or Coolidge, I'll be kind of looking at them from the perspective of someone who's a little bit older than the typical high school debater and is through college and grad school and is currently a PhD student. When we do these podcasts, I'm not going to do any particularly deep, detailed research to try and find the facts of the case. My role in this is going to be more to provide, here's what an adult sees in the resolution. So as a quick teaser, just to illustrate that, in our current resolution, the United States federal government should make reducing the national debt a fiscal priority. I look at that, and my initial kind of gut feeling about that is that this resolution really should be all about whether or not the United States federal government should prioritize honoring the agreement that it's made in undertaking the debt,
right,
and then looking at the way that the debt operates. So that's kind of the part I'm going to bring, is just that sort of kind of broader analysis. What sort of other things are implicated in the resolution? Ethan, what's your angle going to be?
So I, on the contrary, am a more detailed-oriented person. I like to look at those arguments that the Coolidge packet has inside of them and really look at what they're saying, the facts in those arguments or the experts that they cite. But not to go too deep, I do like a good broad look at the resolution. But what I like to do is throw out a couple arguments on the affirmative, throw out a couple on the negative. And when you cross-reference them and look at those arguments next to each other, you can kind of uncover some of the major assumptions that are made in the round on each side. And really, all debate is built on is where you go from those assumptions. So on the affirmative side, you're assuming a lot of things, like, and you kind of need to uncover, why should we make this a priority? Like, why is this an important thing to do now? But on the negative side, my first thought goes to, what else could we do? Like, why is this not a priority? Where should our priorities be? And there's a lot of questions on both sides that when you put the arguments together, you can kind of see a sort of value kind of emerging from those different things. Like, this is what the affirmative mindset is, and this is what the negative mindset is. And I think the key to doing well in a debate is when you're going in there as affirmative or negative, to sort of put that mindset on, almost as like a hat on top of your head, if you will, and really develop and live that mindset as you're playing the amazing game of debate. And that comes with, like I said, the understanding that I value in my paradigm before, just really a good understanding of the resolution so that people feel comfortable going into a tournament like they know what they're talking about. Because I know the scariest feeling for me was going into a tournament where I did not know what I was talking about. And that's what I seek to solve here.
Yeah. Fantastic. Now, the of course, we'll have a lot of these shows, hopefully, over in the coming year. For a public forum, there will be, I think, 6 resolutions over a competitive season.
Sounds right.
Lincoln Douglas is about that. Coolidge will have 4 because they're on a quarterly system. But when we're either in between resolutions or done with resolutions, we're going to shift to a second kind of show. And that's going to be a bit more focused on technique. Right. And we're going to rotate between our 3 different styles of debate and looking at different case elements, ways to different strategies to apply. My favorite technique that my students despise, that I think is critical, is flowing the round.
No.
Oh, yes, Ethan, yes.
It's important. I'll give that to you.
We'll also take a look, depending on the topic of the day, we might also look at some research strategies and ways to find the best kind of solution to really find both the mix of that broad view and the facts that Ethan was mentioning a moment ago. The last kind of show that I really expect us to do is really to also begin also having an interview component to this show. Whether that's coaches who are actively participating and helping create this culture of debate, whether that's different supporters, people who make debate possible, because, of course, debate can be a costly exercise. And many teams have supporters that make that worthwhile and who clearly value debate. And, of course, we also will have interviews with different students who are actively involved in debate as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a great podcast. I feel like people are going to get a lot of value out of this. And I know that if I had this when I was a debater before, that I would really appreciate a different approach to the resolution and really just a breaking down of what's really going on and what the topic entails. And just for all the listeners out there, if you haven't done debate before, debate is fun. I know it doesn't sound like it. I know we've been sitting here for a good amount of time now talking about throwing facts at each other and values and spreading and going all the way to Vermont just to spit more words at each other. I can guarantee you that you definitely need to try debate out. Debate is a very fun thing. And once you really get into it and get good at it, you can get a real sense for what things mean. And you'll see yourself developing the skills to really take things apart and see things for what they truly are and not just people's perception or what they want you to think of things. Like, it's a real skill to have. There's a great community surrounded around it, and tournament days are great. They're a lot of fun, and so are practices. And I think debate is just a really beautiful community to have, and it's a great skill to develop in your life.
Well, that is about all the time we have for our first episode on What's the Res. Ethan, if any of our listeners want to send us questions that we might be able to consider on a future podcast, where should they email those questions?
You can find you can reach us at whatsthers@gmail.com. That's whatsthers@gmail.com. We'll be able to answer any of your questions. If you have questions about resolution analysis, about any of our episodes, or really who we are and what this is all about, you can reach us at that email and we'll be glad to help you out.
Well, thank you for listening to What's the Res. And if you like what you've heard on this episode, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, because that is the supposedly the best way for people to find our podcast. And we look forward to reading your questions. And we'll be back next time with more What's the Res.